Okay, good morning. So, we have the privilege of preparing for Pesach again, and I mean that, by the way. If you're here, it means that you're staying home for Pesach. And I'll tell you that I wouldn't trade staying home. I wouldn't necessarily want to work on Pesach the way we work, but I wouldn't trade staying home for anything in the world. As someone who's been to hotels before, we are the lucky ones, whether we know it or not. We are the ones who are imparting within our families the smells and tastes and flavors and tradition and mesorah. When I think about Yontif, the memories that come up in my mind are chopping charoses with my grandmother, or working with my other grandmother to prepare the maror, or doing, and all of that's lost. I was walking on Shabbos with Yocheved and someone else, and they were comparing notes. Did you start shopping yet? No. What did you start doing yet? And I said, it's amazing. There's a parallel conversation going on in the universe of the people who go away. Did you start shopping for new outfits yet? No. Have you put together your lists? You know, in our case, it's your lists of menus and what you need to buy. In their case, the lists of wardrobe and which outfits you'll change into 400 times a day. So there are two parallel universes going on, and I assure you we are in the lucky one. So I want to spend our time, as we do every year. Really, today is going to be only slightly different. There's only a few changes this year from previous years. But I want to spend our time first defining some of the halacha, some of the rules of Pesach, that give us a context and a background to be able to understand what exactly we're looking for, what's our mission, and then divide our time in three ways: how to prepare the home, how to prepare the kitchen, and then questions about ingredients and medicines and cosmetics and all of that. Okay? So to begin with, the Rambam says in his introduction to the laws of Pesach, there are 8 mitzvot that apply to Pesach today. There are 3 positive commandments, 3 mitzvot asay, and 5 mitzvot lo sase. The 3 positive commandments, lahashpis sa'or, one has to destroy the leaven, le'achol matzah, a positive commandment to eat the matzah, and l'saper b'tzias mitzrayim, says the Rambam, the 3rd positive commandment is to tell the story, to describe the experience of having left Egypt. The 5 negative commandments of Pesach, first of all, you're not allowed to eat chametz from chatzos and on, from midday on Erev Pesach. You're not allowed to eat chametz on the 7 days or 8 days of Pesach. You can't even eat a mixture of Pesach. And then the last 2, Ba'yirah and Ba'yimatzah, you're not allowed to see chametz that belongs to you. You're not allowed to find chametz that belongs to you. So chametz is significant. Pesach is very significant. 3 positive commandments, 5 negative commandments. It goes on to say that Allah teaches, chametz is unique in some areas. We have a general category of ma'achalos asuros. We have laws of prohibited food. We know we're not allowed to eat shellfish and pork, and we can't eat meat and milk, and we can't eat all kinds of foods. But within this umbrella of ma'achalos asuros, of forbidden foods, chametz has a unique status for 5 reasons. Number 1, there is a specific lav. There's a specific prohibition against mixtures of chametz. Normally only the direct food item itself is forbidden, and in a mixture it depends on the ratio and so on. Chametz is forbidden as eating a piece of bread, and chametz is even forbidden in a mixture. Number 2, there are 2 prohibitions against even possessing chametz. What other food am I forbidden? I'm not allowed to benefit. Basa b'chalav is asur b'hana. I'm not allowed to derive benefit from meat and milk. And there are other examples. But chametz, there are 2 prohibitions from even possessing it. Number 3, there's a mitzvah asay to destroy it. I don't have to go destroy meat and milk or pork and the like. Chametz is an obligation to destroy. Number 4, it's asur b'hana. You're not allowed to benefit from chametz, which means you can't feed chametz to your animals, you can't give chametz as a gift, even to a non-Jew. You're not allowed to benefit. And, of course, the most, impactful of the 5 uniquenesses of chametz is the 5th, which is it's asur b'mashehu. Unlike other foods which are prohibited in a different measure, usually a kezias, chametz is prohibited b'mashehu. It means even the smallest, most minute amount of chametz constitutes a biblical violation. You're not allowed to own, you're not allowed to benefit, you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to interact with chametz, even b'mashehu. That's very daunting, it's very scary. Mashehu means a crumb. So that means that in order to observe Pesach properly in my home, I cannot even have a crumb of chametz. And when you hear that, it's very daunting. To clean my home is to sterilize. I need to drop a tent over it, and I need to bring fumigation, and I need to go on the search and destroy mission. It's going to be hours, days, weeks of my life. And what I want to share with you is that that's not the case. That's not the case. So what is chametz? What am I looking for? What do I need to destroy? Chametz is made out of the 5 grains, which are chita, kusemes, sa'ora, shibola, shua, and shipon, wheat, spelt, rye, oats, and barley. And only those grains, only flour produced from grinding those grains mixed with water creates chametz. Anything else, even when it can be manipulated to look like chametz, is not chametz. So what is an example of something that can be manipulated to look like chametz? Kidneys. That's why our rabbis came across the category of kidneys. For another time, we can elaborate at length. There's two major opinions about why the rabbis prohibited kidneys. But kidneys, either because grains normally get mixed into them, or because they can be manipulated. But kidneys, we know, are legumes. They are those items, the food items, that can be manipulated to yield a similar product as chametz. But they're not chametz. Kidneys we don't eat, that's the Ashkenazic custom, but we allow a sick person to eat kidneys, we allow a child, we allow a person who's allergic to other things to eat kidneys. Kidneys you're not obligated to destroy or to eliminate. If kidneys falls into a mixture, it's permissible. So kidneys is not nearly as toxic and as cancerous as chametz is in terms of our attitude towards it. So quinoa, as an example, quinoa, which is a fairly new, people think it's a grain, it's not a grain. How would you describe quinoa? It is a like a seed of sorts. Quinoa, even the OU has reversed its opinion. Even the OU is on board now with everybody else that quinoa is permissible. It's not a grain, nor is it kidneys. It is permissible on Pesach. However, it's amazing because it really validates the original institution of kidneys. They found that in many of the quinoa packages, because of the way it's processed and packaged, they found wheat. They found chametz. So therefore, you can't just buy any quinoa. The quinoa has to be specially approved on the list of what is good for Pesach. You have it in the packets from the CRC or the Star K or any of these organizations that are putting out lists. They'll tell you which are the quinoa woods that are good. But quinoa, even according to everyone we've been saying for years, according to the opinion, that quinoa is not kidneys, nor is it chametz, nor is it grain. So the flour of the five grains, and only those five grains, wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye, that comes in contact with water and remains unmanipulated, without manipulation for 18 minutes, that produces chametz. That produces chametz. And chametz is aser b'mashu. When you have that leavened bread, when you have that presence of even a crumb, that will be aser even b'mashu. It's forbidden even in any amount. So we know you're not allowed to have it. We said there are two biblical prohibitions, bayirah and bayimatzah. I can't own my own chametz. I can't see it. By the way, bayirah and bayimatzah apply to my chametz. I can see chametz on Pesach. I point this out every year and I get questions about it every year. You're allowed to go in the bread aisle of the supermarket on Pesach. You're not forbidden from seeing chametz. You're forbidden from seeing chametz you own. So that's bayirah and bayimatzah. It's chametz that you own that is forbidden. I have source sheets which I didn't copy for you with all these sources of Mishnayos and Gemaras and Shulchan Aruch and Mishneh Berurah. But anyone who wants it, I'm happy to send it to you afterwards. So there are essentially two methods of how we search and destroy, how we rid ourselves of that chametz. Because if there's a biblical prohibition to own, multiple biblical prohibitions to own chametz, and we have a positive commandment of Tashbisu, we have a positive obligation to search and destroy that chametz, there are two methods essentially that we employ. Number one, so it's called bittul chametz, which is, I resolve in my heart that all chametz in my possession be like the dust, and therefore have no consequence to me at all. Bittul, according to many, becomes hefker. I'm declaring it ownerless. I'm relinquishing my relationship with the chametz. And therefore, if it's not mine, I can't be in violation of any of these prohibitions. So imagine how easy preparing for Pesach would be if we followed that biblical law and we just did bittul. Your entire Pesach preparation would be to stand in your kitchen, anywhere in your home or outside of it, and to simply say, chametz, I hereby have no more relationship with you. You and I are finished. We're done. I relinquish my ownership of you. I have no relationship with you. You are not my possession. You are hereby declared ownerless, hefker. You are hereby not mine. And then you couldn't violate. Then you could not violate the problem of owning chametz. So why don't we say that? Why isn't that enough? Because we're fearful that even if you do that, then you're going to, by accident, reach into your cabinet or your cupboard. By accident, you're going to discover a wonderful donut on Pesach, and you're going to take a bite. If we allowed you to have chametz, access to chametz in your residence, then even if you relinquished ownership of it, which biblically breaks the relationship and would suffice, nevertheless, we're fearful that you're going to come to eat it. And therefore, we instituted a second method of ridding ourselves of our chametz, and that's called bedikas chametz and biur chametz, or loosely translated as the search and destroy mission. the search and destroy mission. If I go on the search and destroy mission, why do I still have to do bittul? Why do I still relinquish my ownership, which we recite at night after checking, the next morning after burning? Why am I reciting this relinquishment? Why am I reciting this nullification of my chametz if I'm searching and destroying anyway? Because maybe there'll be chametz that I don't find. And if I don't find the chametz, it will have been in my possession, my ownership, I will have violated. So therefore, the greatest safeguard is to do both. I search and destroy, as well as relinquish ownership, and therefore, I'm not fearful of encountering the chametz on Pesach, and chametz that I didn't know about, I'm not fearful it was under my possession, and therefore was I in violation. There's a third method, which is fairly recent, and that is mechirat chametz, selling chametz. And that is, since it belongs to the non-Jew, I'm not in violation of Bayira Bayimatza. Even when I sell my chametz, I can't leave it exposed, because we have the original fear that I may come to encounter it and eat it. So if I sell my chametz, I still have to put it in an isolated area. So we do these three methods, or two plus methods, in order to make sure we have no chametz on Pesach. What if you do find chametz on Pesach? What do you do? So, it's interesting. If you find it on Yontif itself, you simply cover it. If you find it on Chol HaMoed, it depends. If you sold your chametz, you're not entitled to flush it down the toilet, or burn it, or get rid of it, because it doesn't belong to you. So you put that chametz in an isolated area where you've put the chametz that you sold. If you didn't sell your chametz, then you flush it down the toilet, or then you burn it. So, but it's, you see how strong it is, how effective it is, this idea that we've sold the chametz. Yes?
Okay, if, like,
yes, absolutely. You could do it on your behalf. Now, before we get to the house, and I'm going to risk my life as I do every year standing here and telling you that I believe you can clean your entire home, no matter what size and no matter how little your kids are, in a couple of hours, in just a few hours. Before we do that, I want to explain to you why I feel so strongly every year I take my life into my hands by telling you this. Because there is a halacha on Yontif of simcha. We are obligated to experience simcha. We're obligated to experience joy. What is simcha? How does it manifest itself? The Gemara explains, basar v'yayin, with meat and fine wine. For women, buying jewelry or nice clothing for Yontif. For children, they buy a new toy. The physical stimuli bring us into Yontif. We experience a sense of simcha. But the prerequisite to feeling simcha, to feeling joy, is to be rested. If you're exhausted, and if you're stressed, and if you're beaten, then there's no capacity to come to a Seder and be uplifted by your children's Divrei Torah, or to be moved by stimulating conversation with your guests, or to have the Haggadah transport you to another time and another place, and to relive history. If you are exhausted and beaten down and stressed and feel abused by the preparations of Pesach, you will forfeit what Pesach is all supposed to be about. And therefore, as I say every year, our rabbis, when they established the rules of Pesach, and the Torah, when it gave us this gift of the holiday of Pesach, was trying to create a vehicle for us to experience what liberation, what emancipation, what freedom are all about. To burden ourselves and to put upon ourselves the opposite. To enslave ourselves electively by doing spring cleaning instead of Pesach preparation, I think is forbidden in the highest magnitude and order. If you want to spring clean in December or spring clean in May. Do not do spring cleaning before Pesach. Do not do spring cleaning. Because, you know, what we've heard through the ages of the women complaining of the Pesach preparation and the burden and the impossible and the hands and knees and climbing on the ladder and all of that has nothing to do with halacha. Halacha, Jewish law, does not mandate it, does not ask of it, and frankly is not impressed by it. It's utterly unnecessary, and it is a violation of simcha, of being able to feel joy. You're violating your ability to come to the Seder and be moved, and to be rested, and to be prepared, and to be transported. So it's important to understand that embracing chumras, embracing stringencies in cleaning, is at the same time embracing enormous leniencies on experiencing yontif. And experiencing Yontif supersedes. So it doesn't supersede in a way that I'm telling you you should cut corners. It doesn't supersede in a way I'm telling you don't be careful. You have to be careful. The Mishnah Berurah says one should begin their Pesach cleaning 30 days before Pesach. We take it very seriously. But at the same time we take it seriously, we must understand that distinction between spring cleaning and between Pesach preparation. Pesach preparation is making sure that I don't have access to chametz in my home that I may eat. Spring cleaning is doing other things to my home that I want to do once a year to make sure it's clean, but that have nothing to do with Pesach. So what are these rules? Let's go through these rules. And then we'll be able to go through the house because we'll understand these rules. And as I said, I have all the sources. I'm happy to email to you another time what chametz is and so on. So rule number one, practical rule number one. If during the year, you don't have this in your handout, I'm just telling it to you. If during the year chametz is not brought to a particular place or area, there is no need for it to be cleaned or checked for chametz. It's based on a Mishnah, Psachim Beis Amid Aleph, the opening Mishnah in all of Psachim, or La Arbasar, Bodkim Es HaChametz Lo Arner, Kol Makom Shein Machnisim Bo Chametz, Ein Sarach Bedika. It's a Beferish Mishnah. Shulchan Aruch quotes it. Bodei Kol Makom Sheyesh Lach Hashem Echnisu Behem Chametz, Kol Chadre Habayis Ha'aliyos Trichem Bedika, Pa'amim Adam Nichnas Behem Bepito Biyado, Otros Yayin Shein Mestapik Mehem, Vechein Madben Vechayotze Behem Ein Trichem Bedika. So rule number one is, only areas of your home where chametz has entered, that's what needs to be cleaned. So, you tell me, is there ever an obligation to climb on a ladder and dust the ceiling fan for Pesach? Is there ever an obligation to climb on a ladder for Pesach? One never needs to be on a ladder in Pesach preparation. Unless you found yourself during the year climbing that ladder while eating a sandwich, while enjoying the fan, there's never an obligation or reason. So all of these places, the nooks and crannies, the crawl spaces, the fans, the ledges, the places that you can't access in the normal use of your home need not be cleaned, need not be prepared. As I said, it's a explicit Mishnah, Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah says it, Mistama ein machnisim behem chametz, elam ken yodea sheichnis behem chametz. If you have a place that you're unsure whether you brought chametz, you can assume you did not bring chametz unless you know that you did. Now the exception to that rule is if you have little kids at home, all bets are off. But even when you have little kids at home, you know there are places they did not bring chametz. You know there are places. They didn't crawl in the crawl space above your garage. They didn't climb a ladder and leave a sandwich on top of your ceiling fan. They didn't put something on the windowsill. They didn't go deep into different areas in the guest room, closet, crawl space. So when we are emptying the contents of our home and wiping it down and vacuuming, cleaning, we're doing spring cleaning. It is not halacha. The halacha is, number one, most important, you only need to clean areas that you know chametz went. If you don't have young children at home, and you haven't had grandchildren visit for long periods of time with unfettered access to every area of your home, then if you know that food was eaten in the kitchen, and you know, maybe you walk through the other bedrooms and you give a quick glance, you look around, you open a couple drawers, and you confirm that no food was brought there, those rooms are now clean for Pesach. Those rooms are ready for Pesach. You never need to be on a ladder for Pesach. And we'll see in a moment, nor do you need to be on your hands and knees either. Because number two, if an item is not used on Pesach, there is no need for it to be cleaned or checked, provided it will be sealed and chametz will be sold. So here's another image I have from my childhood. You do not need to be taking toothpicks to toaster ovens. You do not need to be taking toothbrushes to sandwich makers and blenders. Those items, what are those called? Appliances, Naomi. Those appliances that you're going to be putting away for Pesach, you know what you do need in order to clean them and get them ready for Pesach? You put them away. That's what you do. You don't need to clean them, you don't need to sterilize them, you don't need to attack them, you don't need to spray them, you don't need sharp objects with them. If you're putting it away for Pesach and selling any chametz that might be contained within, then you put it away. You put it in the cabinet and you put a piece of tape over the cabinet. You put it in a box and you seal the box and put it in the other room. If you're putting it away, it need not be cleaned. So we've just saved all of the cleaning of appliances in our kitchen. Should take 3 minutes. 5 minutes, put them away. That's the total time. Number three, crumbs that are inedible, even by a dog, are not considered chametz, even if they're bigger than a kazayis. Shulchan Aruch Siman Tov Mem Beis. Hapas atzma she'ipsha v'nifsala mila'achol ha'kelev, u'malugma she'nitzricha, eina chayev levo'er. If the chametz, even if it's a significant size, bigger than 30 grams, more than a kazayis, but it's inedible to a dog would look at it and be repulsed, one is not obligated to get rid of it. So now tell me, do you need to pull out your refrigerator or your oven or dressers? Absolutely not. First of all, you didn't sneak behind there to eat the chametz. Second of all, if that's what you're feeding your family in Chol HaMoed for dinner, you got bigger problems. You don't plan on accessing that area on Pesach. And lastly, whatever is there is inedible even to a dog. And if you're not sure of that, then spray it with some toxic bleach spray behind or in cracks or crevices, and you have transformed whatever crumb might be there to be inedible even to a dog, and thereby to be not chametz, it's no longer considered to be chametz. So crumbs that are inedible even by a dog are not considered chametz, even if they're larger than a kezias, even if they're more than 30 grams. Number four, there is no need to check for crumbs less than a kezias if they're dirty or soiled and wouldn't be edible by a human. Mishnah Berurah, Siman Tuf Mem Beis, Sif Katan Lamed Gimel. Dafka kishyesh bein hakol kezias, azak li mitzarfo. Kishlo nishar bein hakol kezias, ein tzarch levaro, vafilo ein osu lechazik. Says the Mishnah Berurah, if it's less than a kezias but inedible to a human, it is not considered chametz and need not be destroyed. So, chametz that might be in the cracks of your floor tiles, that might be behind the oven, behind the refrigerator, behind the dresser, in the kids' room, it's not chametz. And you don't plan on accessing it, you're not obligated. So we've so far eliminated, you don't need to clean any appliances, I mean the minor appliances in your kitchen, you're going to be putting them all away. You don't need to move any appliances. You should never, ever be moving an appliance for Pesach. You don't ever need to climb on a ladder, and you don't even ever need to get on your hands and knees. We've just consolidated Pesach cleaning and taken away hours. Spring cleaning? Oh, that's a huge work. That is to go through every dresser, every drawer, move every appliance. That's huge. Climb on every ceiling fan, every ledge, every crawl space. But if you're getting ready for Pesach, you don't need to do any of those things. So all we're searching for, hold on one second, all we're searching for is chametz that will be exposed on Pesach, which is less than a kezias and edible by a human, or more than kezias but edible by a dog. And if it doesn't meet those criteria, we're not obligated to search for it. Yes?
Even if you see those crumbs, like the crumbs that are in between this tiny space between your stovetop and the countertop.
Right, so if you see tiny crumbs between your stovetop and your countertop and you can't access them, you spray them with a bleach. You spray them with some toxic spray, thereby making them inedible. You can't access them to clean. You also can't access them to eat them. They may scare you. Their presence, we're allergic to chametz on Pesach, so its presence is daunting. But it's not a problem. You spray it with bleach. Yes? Well, you got to kasher your countertops. We'll talk about it in a minute, because you're going to be putting hot pots there, you're going to be putting food there. That's different. I'm talking about that which you're taking away from your kitchen so far. Yes?
What if in your refrigerator, you know, little cracks or whatever, little areas
Right, so that you do your best. We're going to get to that. We're going to go through the appliances in the kitchen in a moment. But for example, the accordion rubber on the door of the refrigerator, which is hard to clean, we'll talk about it in a minute. Well, we'll walk through the kitchen in a moment. Let's leave the kitchen. I'm talking about the house as a whole. You understand where I'm coming from now when I say it shouldn't take more than 2 to 3 hours, and by that I mean 2 to 3 times longer than it should take, but 2 to 3 hours to clean your house for Pesach? It means not the kitchen. Other than your kitchen, you're walking your bedrooms, you're walking the hall, you're walking your laundry room, and you're looking. You're making sure, you're confirming that chametz didn't go to the places that they don't normally go. Now again, if you have children and they have in their pockets, you got to check. Kids can put chametz everywhere. You got to check pockets. You got to check closets. I don't mean to minimize that, especially when you have little kids around. But if you don't have little kids, or if you're assigning your little kids to go through the pockets of their clothing and their dressers, you don't have to be moving dressers and emptying and wiping down and replacing the clothing. That's spring cleaning. That's not Pesach preparation. Pesach preparation should not take that long. Okay? That's the rest of the home. Let's go into the kitchen. Any questions about the rest of the house? What we just said? If you're not going to access it, by the way, for example, if you have rooms that you don't want to go into on Pesach, just put a piece of tape across the door. It's ready for Pesach. The cabinets of your kitchen. Again, I have vivid memories of taking every plate out of every cabinet and wiping it down and wiping it and putting it back only to seal it. It's spring cleaning, but it's unnecessary for Pesach. Whatever you're not accessing on Pesach, the totality of getting it ready for Pesach is putting a piece of tape over it. That's it. Put a piece of tape across the cabinet, it's now ready for Pesach. I mean to say that your cupboard, that you had your snack cabinet, which was filled with chametz, if you sell real chametz mamish, then really all you do, even with the chametz in that cabinet, and crumbs and dirt and mold and grime, just put a piece of tape over it and it's ready to go for Pesach. If you want to clean it, do it after Pesach. Spring cleaning can take place later. If you're not going to access it, all you need to do is put a piece of tape over it. So even within the kitchen, we can prepare so much of the kitchen by simply taking our minor appliances and getting rid of them in a box, in a cabinet, in a closet, and taping it. We can prepare half of our 90% of our kitchen, other than that one poor cabinet we designate for Pesach, we can prepare 90% of our kitchen by putting tape over the cabinets. You don't have to empty, wipe down, line, you know, wash. It's all unnecessary, totally unnecessary. So now that's taken what? Taping our kitchen. Maybe you have to empty one or two cabinets because you want to put your Pesach things in there. That takes some time. Okay, so we're half an hour in. I've taped my cabinets, and I've emptied one cabinet to put my Pesach things in, and I've moved my minor appliances, and I'm now looking at a clean kitchen that I need to kosher the sink, the countertop, the microwave, the oven, and get the refrigerator ready. I'm not minimizing that. That's a lot of work. But the preparation of getting the kitchen ready other than koshering shouldn't take very long either. So the house doesn't take very long. The kitchen doesn't take very long. Koshering takes the longest. But even that is fairly straightforward. We'll go through it in a moment. Yes?
So where does it come to the idea that you have to throw it?
Okay, so that's a different question, which is, what do we sell on Pesach? There's a chumrah that many have to not sell chametz mamish. Some only sell a mixture with chametz, or they only sell something which isn't real chametz. Look, there are many who have the custom not to sell real chametz. So if that's your custom, then we get rid of all cereal boxes, pasta boxes, and so on. It's a stringency. According to some, they see it as halachically binding. According to others, it's a stringency. The strict letter of the law is that you can sell even real chametz. That's what the selling of chametz was originally promoted, because because Jews had businesses where they had large inventories of chametz, and it wasn't feasible to get rid of it. So they sold it outside the home. It later changed that Mechiras Chametz took place even for chametz within the home. But it's a legitimate binding sale. Some, however, have a stringency because the sale looks like a harama. It looks like it's a legal loophole because it's in your house, you're going to buy it back after Pesach. Because it looks like a legal loophole, they don't want to employ it for real chametz. But that's a stringency. So there are both options. So if you have that stringency, so then you have the additional 15 minutes of finding the real chametz in your cabinet and making sure to get rid of it. If you don't follow the stringency, literally all you need to do is tape your cabinets. Jill. Well, they should be put away because, again, you may come on Chol HaMoed, you have a wonderful social event, and you love that purse goes with that outfit, and you're going to forget that you didn't clean it, and you're going to grab it. So they should be put away. I mean, again, I think it's great chinuch to teach every kid to clean their backpack for Pesach, but if that's too much trouble, just take the backpacks and put them in a cabinet that you're putting tape over, and they're ready for Pesach. Again, that's if you don't sell chametz mamish. If you don't, your kids have literally chametz on the bottom of the backpack, you might want to make them clean it out. So for chinuch, for education purposes, it's good to tell your little kids, your job is to go to the backyard and clean your backpack, clean your knapsack, clean your school bag for Pesach. But if you didn't want to, and you wanted to stick it in a room, in an area, in a crawl space, in a cabinet that you weren't opening over Pesach, you could just put it in there and put a piece of tape over it. We've eliminated. What do people complain about the most? The toothpick with the toothbrush, with the tiny appliances, the cabinets with the wiping down, moving the dresser, pulling out the oven, sliding out the fridge, climbing the ladder. None of that needs to happen. I know I'm repeating myself a lot, but I can't drive it home enough. Not only does it not need to happen, it's wrong for it to happen. Because you will come as a shmata to your Seder, you'll blame men, you'll blame the rabbis, you won't enjoy Pesach, and you won't experience the freedom that Pesach is supposed to provide. So not only do you not have to do it, but I would humbly submit that you should not do it. Yes? Computer keyboard, you should do your best to clean it. They have these, it's like air, it's high-pressured air comes out that you can use. But again, do your best. If you did your best, you turned it over and you shook it and you tried to get to it and you couldn't, if you couldn't get it out to clean, you're not going to get it out to eat from it on Pesach. You do your best. That's what Halacha wants from you, is to do your best. Halacha does not want us to become OCD and erotic and to beat ourselves up. Halacha wants us to do our best within a reasonable, normal fashion. Okay, so that's Pesach cleaning, made easy. Now we get to the koshering. Now we get to koshering in the kitchen. So let's go on a tour around the kitchen. What shall we start with? Let's start with the microwave. The microwave. Glass cannot be koshered. Ashkenazim Paskin, glass cannot be koshered for Pesach. So the glass tray in the microwave needs to be removed. The microwave should be cleaned and left for 24 hours without use. And then you put a microwave safe utensil in the microwave with water. You put it on whatever setting necessary to fill the microwave chamber with steam. And then you run it a second time, moving the styrofoam bowl or cup or microwave safe utensil over, so the spot where it was becomes kashered also. We have a principle in the laws of kashrus. Kabolo kach polto. The same way that the utensil absorbed taste to begin with is the same way that it purges taste. So the way a microwave, the walls of the microwave absorb taste is through steam. Steam is the medium that allows it to absorb. Since steam is the way it absorbs, steam is the way that it's purged. So you put enough water in a microwave safe object in the microwave in order for it to produce enough steam. Now be very careful. Caution every year. When you put water to boil too long in a microwave, when you open the door of that microwave, it's been said that it can explode or it can splash boiling hot water. So be very, very careful when you open the door of that microwave. But remove the glass, make it clean, wait 24 hours after it's been cleaned, and then put enough water in the microwave that it produces steam. Your microwave is now kosher. Yes, Melanie. What do you mean, disposable? In the microwave. Yeah, well, you could use, or it can be a disposable item, which is the easiest, but you can use a microwave-safe utensil that is either Pesach or non-Pesach, once the microwave hasn't been used for 24 hours. That's better? Okay, yeah, you could do that. Yes? I haven't seen anyone suggest that. I would just take it out. I would take it out. The whole reason it turns is to try to get the heat even within the food. I've never taken a bite where this side was hot and that side was cold because it wasn't spinning. So that's take it out, put it away is the easiest. Yes?
There are little spaces in the microwave that some people get into, and there's gunk in there. Like, you have to take it out, or do you, when you kosherate it?
No, so you should try to get the gunk out. In the filter screen of the microwave, often it's absorbed the splashes, all the explosions and all of that. So yeah, you scrub it, you clean it as best you can. You can spray it, again, with some toxic spray so that you've nullified the potency of whatever food is there. And then there are some, I saw in this year's guides, who say even after doing all that, you should still cover whatever food you put in the microwave. Because the microwave is complicated to kosher, and because nobody asked this, and nobody thought of this for years, and suddenly it's become a problem. But the door of the microwave is made out of glass, and we said you can't kosher glass. So they say, even after doing everything, you should still cover what you put in the microwave. So it's a great suggestion in general, especially if you use one microwave for milchiks and fleishiks all year round. I always recommend, if you go to Bed Bath & Beyond, I don't get a cut, but I know they sell it there, they make these microwavable domes that have little holes around. The steam can escape, but no steam can get in because it can't go both directions at the same time. You designate one as fleishiks, one as milchiks. If you want, one as parv, and you put those microwave dome on whatever plate you're putting in the microwave. So many suggest you do that for Pesach, even when you're koshering, even after koshering, because of some of those challenges, that you cover the food in the microwave nonetheless. Okay, that's the microwave. Next, we get to the oven. If your oven is self-clean, yashar koach, you're in good shape, then you don't even need to clean your oven, and you don't need to wait 24 hours. You could bake your challah, and then 5 minutes later, run a self-clean cycle on your oven. The heat of a self-cleaning oven gets to the temperature of what's called libun gamur. It's the highest order of kashering. It can incinerate. If you put a wooden spoon, don't try this at home. If you left a wooden spoon in your oven and ran a self-clean cycle, you'd find a pile of ash on the bottom of your oven when you open the door. That's how hot it gets. So that's libun gamur. That's the highest order of koshering. And that's why you need not wait 24 hours. You can right away kosher your oven with that method. So people ask every year if your self-clean cycle is supposed to go 3 hours, but it turned off after 2 hours for some reason and it didn't last. It's still okay. If it reached that peak temperature and sustained it for a period of time, then it's considered to have been koshered with the self-clean. If your oven is non-self-cleaning, then we know what to get you for your birthday and anniversary. If your oven is non-self-cleaning, then you should clean it well, wait 24 hours, and leave it on the highest setting for an hour. clean it well, leave it 24 hours, and then leave it on. Why do we wait this 24 hours? I keep referencing the 24 hours. In halacha, we have a concept called a ben yomo and eino ben yomo. Really, strictly speaking, according to halacha, when you have real food, it is significant as long as it's before you. When you have the taste of food that's been absorbed into a utensil, taste has potency only for 24 hours. Meis leis. After 24 hours, a taste, not the real food, the taste that it left over, a taste is only potent for 24 hours. After 24 hours, after meis leis, it's considered to be spoiled. It's considered to be rotten. It's not considered to be a viable or potent taste. Which means to say that after 24 hours, if I boiled up pig's feet in my pot. You see that being sold in Walmart? I don't know who buys that in Walmart. But anyway, so I boil that up in my pot, and then I wait, clean my pot, I wait 24 hours, and then I make a chicken soup in the same pot. Is it kosher? Chicken soup is 100% kosher. Now, I'm not allowed to do that lechatchila. I can't do that to begin with. Why? Because our rabbi said, you're going to miscalculate. If you made the chicken soup at 23 hours and 54 minutes, now you're eating chicken soup mixed with pig's feet, you're violating a biblical prohibition. So because people may not be careful, the rabbi said, never ever do that. We have kosher dishes and non-kosher meat, and we have milk. There was a great rabbi, one of the Rishonim, the Ra'ah, who had one set of dishes. He'd use it for fleishiks, he'd wait 24 hours, and then he'd use it for milchiks. He'd wait 24 hours and use it for fleishiks. We don't follow that opinion. We have separate dishes because we're afraid, atu ben yomo, eino ben yomo, that we're going to mix up the dishes, that we're going to mix up the time period, the lapse, and so on and so forth. However, we employ it all the time. If you've asked me a kashrus question, if you said to me, my moron husband, by accident, put the pod cover on the wrong pod, used the wrong knife in the dishwasher, I will always ask you back, if you've asked me, you know this, in an email or over in person, the fleishik pot, was it used within 24 hours? The milchik spoon, was it used within 24 hours? Because it's only a viable taste and therefore creates a conflict if it was used within 24 hours. So when it comes to kashering, we wait 24 hours, which means that strictly speaking, there's not even a taste there. Strictly speaking, it's kosher. A clean utensil 24 hours after it's previously been used, biblically, is already kosher. Because whatever taste is absorbed in it is no longer viable. So now for us to kosher it is much easier. It's much easier. I'll explain to you. You didn't come for a shir in Yoredeya.
It's interesting because years ago they would take a knife and trace it and put it
in the ground. Right, that they still do. That's a koshering. Right, that's a koshering for the knife. You stick it in the ground. That's a whole, right. Leave that aside. But one of the questions you'll ask is, you know, you're koshering. So what happens when I'm kashering for Pesach? I take my silverware and I drop it in the pot of boiling water. And the taste comes out of the silverware. Where does it go? In the water. So how come when I put my next knife in, it doesn't go back into the knife? How does kashering work? Why should kashering work? It's not some magical, mystical heebie-jeebie witchcraft. Why does it work? I'm boiling water, I put my utensil in, it purges the taste from the utensil, but why doesn't it go right back in? So there's a number of answers to that. First of all, we have a amount of water, which is 60 times the utensil we're putting in, so whatever taste comes out is nullified, it can't go back in. But another one of the answers is, what taste is coming out? I'm only koshering things which are in eino ben yomo. I've waited 24 hours, so whatever taste comes out is not really potent. It's not really potent to be able to go back in. But all this is too complex, you didn't come for a shir in your day. So let's get back to our kitchen. Yes?
Oh.
Right. So I was about to, yeah, great. The convection oven is kosher like a non-self-clean oven. You clean it, wait 24 hours, leave it on the highest setting for an hour. That's how a convection oven is kosher. Yes?
There's always still an oven, you know, the size closer pieces that even when you finish cleaning it, when you touch it, you'll see there's...
So you clean it, you scrub it, you spray it, and you do the best you can. Yeah. Yeah. You should do the regular self-clean cycle, but if it automatically shuts off earlier, which many of them do for some reason, then as long as it's been on for a significant amount of time and reached its peak temperature, it's considered kosher.
If it's convection and regular in the same oven, can you use the self-clean?
You can use the self-clean, yeah. If it has a self-clean cycle, you can use the self-clean. If it doesn't have a self-clean, you can run it. They have convection microwave ovens. That you run like a regular oven. You put it on the highest setting for an hour after not using it for 24 hours. Yes? Yeah, yeah, because it's totally incinerated, whatever was in there. So yeah, it should be wiped down. Okay, moving on. Sinks, let's talk about sinks. We'll get to it. Sinks. We make our way to the hardest. And sinks. So, bless you. Stainless steel sinks can be kashered very easily. You boil water till the point that it's mala ababuos, till it's bubbling, a rolling boil of bubbling, and then you pour the boiling water over the surface of the sink. You can't just splash it, and you shouldn't just, you know, have it run. You should pour it around the surface of the sink as best you can. Obviously, when you pour, the water runs. But you do the best you can to pour around the surface of the sink. My guys at the ORB told me this year that they're kashering, even industrial settings in hotel kitchens. You go to Walmart and you buy these, what are they called? No, they're electric pots. Electric water. They're not urns. They're electric water pitchers, so to say. It's like sits on a base. You plug in the base, and it gets so hot, it's a rolling boil. If you open the top and look in, you'll see it's bubbling. And then you can just lift the pitcher off the base, and you can pour it. It's the safest, it's the easiest. You know, we do pots, and it's splattering, and it's spilling, and it's killing. So they're like $20 each, they said, at Walmart or Target. You can buy five of them so that you're heating all at once, and then you take one by one, and it's easy to kosher counters and sinks and everything, because the point is it has a spout, and you could pour it gently, and you can pour it easily, and they highly recommend it as the best way to kosher. No, you can use a Pesach or a chametz pot. It shouldn't have been used for 24 hours if it's a chametz pot. It should be clean either way, but it can be Pesach or non-Pesach, and it shouldn't have been used in 24 hours. But let's get back to the sink. So if you have a stainless steel sink, you have to pour boiling water over its surface, including over the handle and over the control knobs. If you have a mesh filter on the sink, you should replace it. It's not kosher easily. They say that it traps food in there. That should be replaced. They say you should have a Pesach one. If you could see, it's absolutely clean. It's metal, and you could pour the boiling water over it. Then you could keep it, and you can kosher that one as well. But you should see that it really is completely clean. Also, if you have the sinks where you can pull out the spout, pull it out, turn it over, pour the boiling water on it as well. Make sure that you're getting every area of the spout and of the knobs and of the sink itself. If your sink...
The water hose,
and the water hose also.
Yeah.
Pour boiling water over it. In other words, when I kosher our sink, I pull that out before I start pouring. And then I pour over everything and pull over that and so on and so forth. The ceramic sink cannot be koshered. Ceramic is one of those materials that can't be koshered. It absorbs but doesn't purge. Therefore, you would need to have a sink insert. Anyone here have a ceramic sink? Okay, I don't think many people put them in. Many Orthodox Jews put in ceramic sinks. Many Orthodox Jews who stay home for Pesach put in ceramic sinks anymore. But you would need a sink insert with a hole in the bottom. The dishes would go in the insert, not make contact with the walls of the sink, and so on. Any other questions about sinks? Yes. You just leave the water in the kettle. Correct. If it's made out of...
I'm saying, if it's a glass tea kettle, is that any different, or...?
No, that should be fine as long as... First of all, it doesn't break, a glass tea kettle. Wow. As long as it shouldn't have been used for 24 hours before being used to kosher.
And is there, like, a certain amount of... I mean, do you think, like, a tea kettle is too small to, like, kosher?
So this is all just the practical part. A tea kettle only is going to give you a limited amount of water, so you're going to have to keep boiling over and over and over again. So it's more, again, these like kumkums or whatever they call these things, they were describing to me that they're very inexpensive. Electric kettles. Right, they snap on a base electric kettle. Apparently they're relatively inexpensive, $20, $25 each, and I'm not suggesting, you know, if you have three of them, that's an investment for Pesach every year, because you can kosher your kitchen without boiling pots and carrying them, and they splash back towards you, and they're supposed to go, hey, I'm the one who koshers in our house, so I know this part. It's painful, it's not pleasant. A kettle with a spout is much more controllable, and it's much easier. So, yeah, anything that will bring the water to a rolling boil, till it's mala ababuos, till you see that it's really bubbling over, is going to be fine. Okay, we covered the microwave, we covered ovens, we covered sinks.
Just to clarify, yes. When you start talking about sinks, you didn't
Oh, thank you, Melanie. You clean it, you wait 24 hours. With all these things, other than the self-clean oven, because it's libun gomor, it gets to the incinerating heat. You have to wait the 24 hours, so it's not an eno, so it's an eno ben yomo. You have to wait the me'es la'es, as we described, for the reasons we gave. Countertops. Countertops should be cleaned very well, particularly the cracks and the seams, the areas where the countertops meet, and they meet the appliances. They should be cleaned very well. And then it depends on the surface of your countertop. Most kosher organizations, including the CRC, hold that you can kosher for mica if it's not stained, rusted, and cracked, assuming it's relatively new. The formica can be koshered, granite can be koshered, and most granite-like surfaces, marble and so on. There's a list of countertops on the last page of the CRC handout. The inside of the last page is a summary of all the countertops you can imagine, and many you could never imagine. And most can be koshered by pouring boiling water. Again, you clean the countertops, you make sure it's not used with anything hot for 24 hours, and then you pour boiling water. The same rule applies. You cannot splash the water, because then you're not really doing irui. Then the water is just running along the countertop. You have to actually do irui. You have to pour the water along the countertop. Another hint, a lot of people are very neurotic, not wanting to ruin their cabinets underneath the countertop. So I learned a new trick this year as well. Take plastic, like the plastic disposable Shabbos tablecloths, tape them underneath the granite countertop and have them, you know, go out. And then when you pour the water, whatever rolls off is going to roll down the plastic. It's a little messy for your home, but it's not going to go underneath the counter and run into your wooden cabinet. So if you tape plastic along the underneath the lip of the entire area of your countertops, the water will run down the plastic and not get into and distort your wooden cabinets. So you can kosher with boiling water, or alternatively you can cover them. We had a leak last summer. We put in a new kitchen. My wife's not letting me near her cabinets with hot water. So I went to Home Depot and I bought, linoleum? Flooring. It's like, it comes in rolls and you roll it down. It's kind of thick, but it's, you roll it. And I bought a few rolls of that and cutting it and just putting it along the countertops for Pesach. So the counters will be covered. It'll take less time and be less dangerous than trying to use the boiling water. Yes. Steamers are complicated, yeah. In different years we've talked about steamers. The problem is we paskin you can't kosher with steam. So the steamer has to be hot enough and condense enough that when the steam comes out, it's really water. It's not steam. So that becomes a problem. I'm waiting for somebody to make a Pesach-approved product with the hechsher of the big hashkachas that is a steamer that produces enough steam that it's actually water. That, right, industrial steamers... Right, industrial steamers sometimes will do it. But yeah, it's complicated. So either the boiling water, or you can cover the surface. The area where the seams are, if they're cracks, you can cover that with masking tape, even if you've koshered the rest of the countertop with Eroy with pouring water. But if the area of the seams is the area where food could get trapped, just roll some masking tape over it so that it's covered and you're not having contact with it. Questions about countertops? Yes?
So if you cover it, you don't have to water.
If you cover it, you do not have to kosher it. Some have a chumra to kosher it and then cover it, but if you cover it strictly, you do not need to. I do not plan on koshering.
Like cover with contact paper.
The problem is contact paper is very thin.
I only take the edges and I leave the back, the center with the paper lining.
Ah, I don't. You have to know how thick it is to know whether the heat's going to transfer from whatever pot you're going to put down into the counter below it. It has to be covered enough away that it's truly a separation barrier. So that it has to be thick enough. That's why I like this. Is it linoleum? What do they make this floor? Like rolls of linoleum. It's very thick, and it's wipeable. I mean, it's like the floor of a garage or a laundry room. They use it. So it's thick, and it's cleanable, and you can roll it up and use it every single year. That's why we're trying this year. And I happen to think there's another benefit. This is just my own editorial. In growing up, we had formica in our kitchen, in Teaneck, my parents, and for some reason then the world paskened you couldn't kosher formica, so you had to cover it. And so we had covers, and they were like a thick, it was contact paper, I still remember this blue contact paper, over a thin wood, but it was thick, and my job schlepping it up from the basement, and you got to fit it on each countertop. But there was another benefit to it, which was that for those 8 days a year, the kitchen looked different to us kids. We knew it was Pesach. When you have a granite countertop and you can make your Pesach, your kitchen Pesach dik, and it looks exactly as it does the rest of the year, it's also it's convenient, but it's missing something. It's nice to have it. It's Pesach. Part of the memory and the nostalgia of Pesach is remembering the kitchen looked different. So that's why I'm excited to use this linoleum this year. The kitchen will look different. It's part of the memory. It's part of the nostalgia. You know, what can I tell you? I'm a sappy guy. Yeah. It should be from when you clean it. It should be from when you clean it, 24 hours.
Is the linoleum?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think you need a very sharp scissor, use a razor. I had fun at Home Depot. I got a razor, I got a straight edge, I got the roll. I haven't cut them yet, so we'll try it. Tell you how easy it is later, yes. Foil is gonna actually transfer the heat, and foil easily rips, and you're gonna be sitting on the countertop. So it needs something that has a thickness to it, that's a real barrier.
For years, the clear plastic, very thick, and they sell it in Ace Hardware, and you measure your countertops, they could be thrown into the laundry afterwards, wash it, comes out perfect.
Yeah, like a clear plastic. Go to Lowe's or Home Depot, you'll find a lot of options. Tell someone what you're looking for, and there's really a lot of options, even if you want to cover the counter. Okay, what else? We covered sinks, counters, ovens, microwaves. The backsplash, that's a good point. The backsplash should be kashered within reason. Meaning, if your backsplash goes high, but higher than any pot's ever going to go, you don't need to worry about kashering it. You could either run the covering up it, or you can splash the water on it, but you need to kasher the element, the part of the backsplash that might have contact with your pots, the wall of your pot as well. Even if you put a pot on a trivet, sometimes it can brush up against the backsplash. You never know if it was on a counter, if it hit a backsplash. If you know with certainty that it didn't, maybe you could be lenient. But the general rule is that pots, people put it on a trivet, on a counter, it could hit the backsplash. A spoon, a hot spoon goes against the backsplash. Food splatters against the backsplash. One should treat the backsplash within reason like the counter. Okay, let's talk about the refrigerator. Yes. We'll get to the stovetop. We're making our way up. The refrigerator. Refrigerator should be emptied and wiped. It's probably the one thing in your house that really has to be emptied and wiped down and cleaned. The minug. Really, strictly speaking, there's no reason to line the refrigerator. Everything that goes in there, by definition, is cold. There can be no transfer of taste. You've cleaned it. So really, there's no reason. I remember 1 year, maybe 2 years ago, one of the kashrus organizations put in, you don't need to line it. But then they must have had such backlash from the Nashim Tzidkanios that the next year they took it back. And they said, there's a minute to line it, you should line it. But my point is that if you're lining it, don't go crazy that every millimeter needs to be covered. Put a piece of paper towel down, make it fulfill the minug to line the refrigerator, but don't drive yourself crazy. Now, one important point is that a refrigerator works by the air circulating. So when you line your refrigerator, if you have solid shelves and you line it with something solid, that's fine. But if you have shelves that have perforation or ways for the air to circulate, don't cover that. Perforate whatever you're lining it with to make sure that the air can continue to circulate. Otherwise, you will break your refrigerator or freezer. So make sure the air can continue to circulate. Wipe it down. Clean it as best you can. The accordion rubber around the door. Do the best you can. Don't go crazy. Spray with a toxic cleanser. And again, nobody's eating from there. If you spray with a toxic cleanser, you make it inedible even to a human, less than a kazayas, it's not really chametz, you do the best that you can. That's the refrigerator. Okay? The only thing I think we have left is the stovetop.
Freezer,
same thing. Let the freezer defrost. Let it defrost, yeah. Let it defrost. That loaf of bread that you froze that stuck up against the wall of the freezer, let it defrost. The ice tray? Yeah, also it could be cleaned well and used. Yeah, do the best you can. That's the general rule. The yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, because it was all cold, so no taste transferred, so just clean it well. Uh-huh. What do you mean?
The ice, a maker makes ice.
Right.
And pour some just to keep extra in the freezer. So it's like a bin for the ice. But it's bin.
What's it made out of?
Plastic.
A hard plastic? So kosher, put it in boiling water. We possibly could kosher hard plastic on Pesach. Okay, stovetop. If you have an ice tray, an ice bin. If you stovetop, if you have a gas stovetop.
From the ice maker?
From the ice maker, yeah. If you never touch it, then you can just clean it and use it for Pesach. If you've taken it out and run it through your dishwasher or cleaned it with hot water with chametz utensils, then you should be careful. Because even when it makes ice and it sits in it, it's cold, but just as a chumrah, you can kasher. Stovetop, gas. So if it has the metal range, you need to leave the burners on high each for a prolonged period of time. What do they suggest? And then you cover the catch areas and you cover the rest of the area of the stovetop. Here it is. Sorry. Casually, all parts of the stovetop should be thoroughly cleaned, including scraping residual food from the surface, not used for 24 hours. Then the fire or coil should be turned to its maximum temperature for 1 hour. Finally, the knobs, catch trays, and all areas between the burners must be covered with aluminum foil. So if it's gas, leave it on the highest setting for an hour. If it's electric, they don't say, I don't know why here he says for an hour. Previously he said till it glows, till you see it reach its 15 minutes, till it glows, till it gets red. Leave it glowing red for a bit, and then cover all the areas underneath. If you have a glass top stove, which is the most popular today, then again, Ashkenazim, strictly speaking, we paskin, you cannot kosher glass. So what do? You leave the burners on high each for 15 minutes, not at the same time, two at a time, till they glow and retain that red element for a bit. Then when it cools, I say you pour boiling water across the surface of the glass, because there are minority opinions that do believe you can kosher, so to fulfill those. And then the most important thing is that on Pesach, you not put anything on the surface of the glass. So you can put the pots, obviously, on the burners, but don't rest a spoon on the glass. Make sure you don't put anything on the glass in the area in between the burners. Don't cover it. We've learned from previous years, if you cover it, you'll crack it. Don't cover it, but don't put anything on the glass in between the areas of the burners. Yeah, CRC or the Star K, I think one of them says you put trivets there. I don't know how practical that is. Trivets have these rubber legs. It's getting very hot there. I don't know how practical it is. Just be very careful not to put anything down in between the areas of the burners.
We're not supposed to put TV on it anymore.
No. No, those days, no. Definitely not. Yes, I say you pour the boiling water. I say it's an extra precaution. Turn the burners each on high, not at the same time. When they cool, not when it's hot, when it cools, pour boiling water over the surface of the glass, because then if you did put the spoon down, or you did, you have more what to rely upon. But most importantly, be careful not to put anything down between the burners. Yes?
And since you've now heated these burners, 15 minutes each, you now be using a Pesach pot to boil the water that you're kashering with cooktop?
Yeah. Yeah, once you've kashered the burners, you should use the Pesach pot, yeah. Once you've kashered the burners, you should use the Pesach pot to heat the water that you're going to... Yeah.
My stove, the top is
You should cover it. No, just leave it covered. You don't have to kosher it. Just leave it covered. Correct. Cover with aluminum foil. Aluminum foil. The catch area, the area in between, should all be covered with aluminum foil.
And the knob area, what should you do with it?
The knob area, just clean well.
And the inside.
Yeah, underneath the...
Burner.
Exactly. Yes. Right.
How do you kosher parts
of the grates
that?
You move them down for a bit, or you yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what we do. We put them in the oven for a self-clean cycle. But it could discolor it, so just a little warning. It gets so hot. You can kosher the covers that way as well, the grates that way as well. Yeah, Jill.
Just a practical tip. I did my glass copper here, and I covered it with foil, and I bought the burners, $2 at Target, Walmart, and they work great for case. I'll have to cover that and plug them in. And
oh, you say you don't even kosher it?
Yeah.
Right. She's saying she doesn't kosher a glass top because it's so complicated. She just buys, you know, the single burners or a double burner they sell, and she just plugs that in on her counter and uses those burners as her electric stove for the 8 days of Pesach. Right. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, if it's an electric panel, you can't really cover it. You just clean it well. Cover them as well in case things splashed. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, any other appliance? Are we done with the kitchen? Yes. The blech cannot be koshered. The hot blech or a hot plate?
A blech cannot.
A blech, like a thin metal sheet that you put on top of your stove, cannot be koshered. You need a Pesach blech. But if you're talking about a hot plate or a plata, clean it, don't use it for 24 hours, then plug it in and leave it on for an hour, and then it's koshered. But cover it anyway with tinfoil. Yes. Yeah, that's why I cover it with double cover of tinfoil. What?
If I didn't use it for about 4 years.
Cover it, yeah, still kosher it, cover it with two layers of tinfoil. Hot water urn. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If you have a plata, clean it, don't use it 24 hours, plug it on the highest setting for an hour. Then I say also do a double covering of tinfoil because often there are stains on it that don't come out. A hot water urn that's not used for chametz, it's just used for hot water, can be used for Pesach as well. If you use it for chametz, meaning you have oatmeal and you're releasing your hot water into your oatmeal and into your other chametz things, then you should have a Pesach urn. Then you should have a Pesach. You don't have to clean it. If you're not using it, just put it away. Put a piece of tape. Yeah, then clean it anyway, but it can still be used. Yeah, Keurig machine. Anyone have a Keurig machine? It's a coffee machine with the pods, which someone told me on Shabbos those plastic pods can lead to cancer, which was nice to hear because I have about 4 coffees a day with that thing. So, Keurig, the OU says, can be koshered. It can be koshered. You take out the area where you put the pod, you clean it very well, and then you run boiling water through it, like a cycle of boiling water through it, and then you use kosher LePesach pods, and then it can be used. Yes, the OU has the list. I guess that should be dipped in boiling water. They didn't really talk about that because I guess the assumption is, but you're right, that should be dipped in boiling water or covered. A barbecue is very difficult to kosher. Oh, I know what utensil I left out. None of you even a appliance. No one's raising their hand about the dishwasher. But the barbecue. I'll tell you about barbecues. Barbecues are very, very complicated to kosher. It requires taking a blowtorch to the entire surface of the barbecue. So for the 8 days of Pesach, I say you get I say there's 3 options. This is again what we do. Either you get a grill pan, which works fantastically. It's a pan that goes on your stove that's ridged, and you can make steaks and hamburgers that taste just like they came, excuse me, off the barbecue. Or you get a George Foreman, and you put that aside as your Pesach barbecue every year. Or you buy the hibachi, what are they called? Hibachi? Hibachi that you use for Pesach. Koshering a grill is possible, but almost impossible. It is, but barbecue sauces, people throw hot dog buns on the barbecue, all kinds of other things. Even so, you need to take a blowtorch to the entire inner surface of the barbecue, so it's not really so practical. Dishwashers. Dishwashers, I'll say the following. The OU Paskins, Rav Schechter Paskins, not only stainless steel, even plastic dishwashers can be koshered. However, if you've tried it, it is very, very difficult. You need to get to the bottom of the dishwasher. You need to take apart the filter. If you do, you'll find all kinds of noodles and I won't even tell you what you'll find there. You could feed your family for a month. God forbid if weren't so disgusting. You'll find it's complicated. There's rubber tubing that's accordion-like. There's plastic. There's nicks. There's crannies. There's filters. It's possible. It's halachic. It's very, very difficult. So if you want to go to the trouble, you can, but it's very difficult, and therefore I don't recommend it. If you want to use the racks to dry what you're washing, there are those who permit that. So even if you know not to use, you put a piece of tape over the controls or over the filter on the bottom, you're not going to use your dishwasher, but you want to run cycle to kasha the rack, so to say, so that, and then you're going to use it just to dry your dishes, that you could do. Yes?
Since when is plastic in a dishwasher kasherable?
Rav Schechter holds that hard plastic is kasherable, so even in a dishwasher. Yeah, you clean it. Yeah, you clean it incredibly well, as we just described, taking apart the filter, getting in underneath, and then you run it three consecutive cycles with no detergent. You'll notice even the OU book, I think this year, doesn't say you need new racks. It says you could use the same racks. It used to always be you need separate Pesach racks. Even the OU book says you could use the same racks. I think it's in the OU book, which will be coming. We ordered a bunch. I have it home if you want to see it. Yes?
It says the dishwashing soap in the OU is type specific one. So it says that you have a check. Which
correct.
Okay.
We thought, I gave out just a word on the handout. I think we finished the appliance, the kitchen, the urn, the hot plate. Warming drawer, you cannot kosher. Well, I take that back. It depends who you look at. According to some, they said you cannot kosher the warming drawer. What does the CRC say this year? Previous years, the CRC gave the advice that you should put sterno, leave the door a little bit adjacent, put sterno, which will build up the heat, which will kosher it. What do they say this year? They don't even have a CRC. Does not look like it has the warming drawer. Microwave, oven. I don't know if anything changed. I'll get back to you on that one. In previous years, we said with the warming drawer, use two sterno lights. It builds up the heat. Leave the door a little bit adjacent, because if it gets too hot, you'll break the warming drawer. Leave it in there, and it will kosher it. But let me see. I don't see the star K. I'll get back to you on the warming drawer if it's different. Assume it's the same unless I get back to you. Yes? You're right. Correct. I don't see it. I don't see it. Okay, what are the questions? Yeah, I'm a very big fan of the CRC book. This is only part of what the CRC has in its Pesach guidelines. Go to the CRC's website, and even better yet, if you have an iPhone or an Android phone, and you go to download the CRC app, you'll see on the CRC app a Pesach section, and you will have your shopping lists if you're out, koshering, it has everything in it. It's fantastic. Yeah, what do they have on the list here? Yeah, whatever they say. They did the research.
Can I ask a quick question about Alex? Can I ask a question about Alex?
Yes, hold on just 1 second. Warming. I'm looking on the CRC app for warming drawer, but I don't see it. Okay. And coffee. You know what here? Hold on. Coffee beans, K-cups require certification even if they contain plain unflavored coffee. Green Mountain non-flavored and non-decaf K-cups with the plain OU is acceptable for Pesach. Instant flavored or decaf require certification. The following are instant coffees that are kosher for Pesach without special certification. Nescafe, Taster's Choice, instant coffee, regular, Folgers, instant, regular.
Could you say
not the decaf. Not the decaf. It's all in the CRC shopping guide, or it's on their website, or you can get it on the app.
I want to confirm something.
Yes.
And it says it here, olive oil. I remember 2 years ago you told me that, and it says, I think it says that here also. You can buy it in BJ's or Costco, as long as it's true. Extra virgin unflavored.
Extra virgin unflavored is acceptable without special Pesach certification. Yeah.
What makes it flavor? Like what does it say?
I don't know. This is beyond the scope of my.
What brand would you suggest?
Whatever is unflavored, extra virgin, you're good to go. Yes.
Question about my cat. He's on IMS right now. Do I have to change his food?
Who?
My cat.
Oh, your cat. I thought you were talking about Stuart. What's he on?
He's on regular IMS.
What is IMS? You gotta look on the pet list. There's a big pet list here. Hold on. Cats. What do you feed them? Cats. Evangers 100% sweet potato beef tips. There's a whole list of cat foods here that are kosher for Pesach. Yeah, that's our handout, but I would trust this one more than I would trust our handout. Look at, they have a list here. The CRC one. Passover foods for your pets, it says.
Okay, so I'm better off going by this as
yes.
Here.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What about spray starch? Is that considered for
I'm sure
that considered
kitchen?
Could that be used?
It's fine. Not a problem. Yep. What are the questions? Salmon? No one's asking me the Costco salmon question?
Okay, Costco salmon.
That's the usual. Salmon. Yeah, CRC. In the booklet I handed out, they have a whole article about fish, frozen fish. They say the following. OU, Kirkland frozen wild salmon after rinsing with water. Kirkland frozen Atlantic salmon. Fresh salmon could always be purchased. Just wash it off. Even filleted already. Yeah. No, salmon is the one fish you can buy even if it's been filleted, because the color of the salmon indicates that it's salmon, and it just should be washed off carefully for Pesach.
But they all say that their color
is that even Costco ones. Yeah, no, the Poskim say it's okay. Yeah. In cold water. Yeah. Yeah. What else? Yes, Jackie. Raisins. Has to be kosher certification. The OU informs us that all OU certified raisins from the USA, which have no additives, are good for Pesach even without special. So any raisins with an OU, even if it's not an OUP, are good.
She said triangle.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's good. Any even with an OU are okay. Yes. Is that what we say?
Yeah, and hard covers as well.
Probably the Dixie or
open.
The CRC holds that paper products can all be used for hot or cold without Pesach certification. CRC holds it's all fine.
What about the plastic?
Which plastic? Oh, to heat? Yeah, that's fine. It's also fine. Parchment paper has to be kosher for Pesach. Wax paper is okay without kosher for Pesach. And contact paper is okay without kosher for Pesach. What is freezer paper?
It's plasticized on the inside. It's white. Reynolds puts it out. And you never see. It's a paper. It's an actual paper, but there is plastic.
I assume it's okay, but I'm not positive, based on these other descriptions. Parchment must bear reliable Passover certification. All parchment paper under the certification of the Star K is permissible for Pesach even without Passover certification. The following brands certified by the OU do not require Passover certification: Kirkland, Members Mark, and Reynolds. This should not be confused with wax paper or freezer paper, which do not require any certification during the year or for Pesach. CRC app, I'm telling you, it's the greatest thing. Yes. Whole or chopped nuts are acceptable without Passover certification, whether in or out of the shell, except if they are blanched or roasted, finely ground into powder, contain BHT or BHA, or shelled pecans or peanuts. Peanuts are kidneys. Yeah, so I have to check on the hashgacha. Okay. What else, ladies and gentlemen? Lipstick. Oh, we didn't get to... Oh, let's talk about that for a moment. Lipstick. Love lipstick. Okay, if you look in the CRC guide, this is why I love... This is when I first fell in love with the CRC. On this page... I'm sorry they're not numbered. Pesach 2014, medicines, cosmetics, and toiletries for Pesach. I won't speak Lashon Hara, particularly in Parshas Tazria and Metzora, but certain Pesach books that have been coming out even posthumously... have done a terrible disservice to the Jewish people by suggesting that every type of cosmetic needs to be on a list somewhere. It's utterly non-true. Major poskim have said for years, anything that's inedible is not chametz. It's not subject to the rules of chametz. So, as the CRC says, all varieties of blush, body soap, conditioner, cream, eyeshadow, eyeliner, face powder, foot powder, foundations, ink, lotions, mascara, nail polish, ointments, paint, shampoo, stick deodorant are all perfectly permissible, no matter what kind of ingredients they have. The only thing that you have a problem with are some liquid deodorants, because anything that has denatured alcohol, which can be consumed, alcoholics have been known to drink bottles of deodorant or perfume, because the alcohol can be consumed. So anything that has a denatured alcohol, you need to confirm. Lipstick, mouthwash, and toothpaste which contain chametz should not be used. So those should be on a list. And how to figure it out? The Star K has a list. Yeah, you could call Linda. She loves to help you with this lipsticks. It's her favorite pastime. What else? Other questions? Tums. Tums changes every year. I'll tell you, this year is Tums. Yeah.
What about other medications for children?
Hold on one second. Just looking for Tums. Where'd you find it? In the toothpaste, wipes, mouth pain relief, miscellaneous. What's Tums? Indigestion, antacid. There are a lot of antacids here.
This is not acceptable for Pesach in the CRC guide.
Tums? Hey, they have a list of recommended antacids in here. Pepto-Bismol.
It says requires medical certification in this
list. On the second page, yeah. I'm on this, the medicine cosmetics page has a list of antacids that are okay. On the shopping guide... In the shopping guide for Tums.
It says not acceptable.
Yeah, chewable antacids require Pesach certification. This brand isn't certified for Pesach. You gotta buy the kosher stuff. Yeah. Bless you. Milk should be bought non-kosher for Pesach. Milk should be bought before Pesach.
What about eggs?
Eggs should be bought before Pesach. Milk and eggs. Yes. It'll say denatured alcohol, yeah. Almond milk, it needs to be, yeah. By those who can't have other milk and should be bought before Pesach. You have to buy it before Pesach, yeah.
There is one in the kosher store.
There is?
Yes, there's almond milk with hashgacha.
OUP?
Almond milk, recommended when bearing Passover certifications. Products preferable. Libras.
Libras,
yeah.
What about medications for children?
What about which?
Medications for children.
That's liquid or chewable?
Liquid.
Liquid, it has to, yeah. Depends what it's for, and... Is it on it? Before Pesach. Before Pesach, yes. Yes. You should buy the one that's kosher for Pesach.
Okay.
It's better, buy the one that's kosher for Pesach. If there's one that's available, you should buy the one that's kosher for Pesach. Yes. 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 Uh-huh. Yes. It says what? Tom's of Maine Whole Care Peppermint, Whole Care Spearmint Toothpaste are recommended for Pesach. Tom's of Maine. There's a long list, and most of the toothpaste that you use are on it. Linda will have that list. You can call her if you want to confirm. Toothpastes, lipsticks. Toothpaste and lipsticks. And medicines. She'll have it. All right? Any other questions? Yeah, we discussed. I'm sorry. Okay, everybody, have a fantastic day. Have fun getting ready for Pesach.